This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, and welcome to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show and Podcast. I am not real estate investor Bruce Norris. I am filling in for Bruce Norris. My name is Joey Romero. He is traveling to California from Florida. As many of you know, he is residing in Florida now. He is headed out this way, and we didn't want to miss. Be nice to me. It's my first radio show I'm hosting. So let's just pretend that that thumbs down button doesn't even exist. How about that? So joining us today is Bob King. He's a certified general appraiser with Delray Appraisal Services. Delray is a full-service real estate appraisal firm providing consulting services throughout Southern California and is an SRA designated member of the Appraisal Institute. Bob's residential real estate appraisal experience includes single family income property, 2 to 4 unit residential income property, land and condominiums. He's also worked on appraisals for the FHA, REOs, estate planning appraisals, retrospective appraisals, and divorce property settlement appraisals. Bob has even served as an expert witness for the Superior Court of San Bernardino County. I'm sure there's some interesting stories there. So we welcome Bob King today. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning. So how does a science and technology degree transfer to appraising?
Well, this is kind of my third career, I guess, which is pretty common in the appraisal industry. I worked in aerospace industry out of college, and then I worked in manufacturing. And as a lot of companies in the United States, the company I worked for got purchased by a larger company and so forth and so on. So I decided to get into something where I had a little bit more control and in control of my own time. So I've been doing appraising for about 16 years. And started out doing nothing but commercial, and kind of went through an evolution with some partners and so forth, and got into doing primarily single family. I still do some commercial. I'm licensed to do commercial, but my focus is single family residential. So here we are 16 years later.
Is there a specialty that you appraise, or is it just any kind of single family residency?
Well, I do primarily single family, but my focus is more geographical in the Inland Empire, and I do some pretty specialty high end relative to the Inland Empire. For instance, tomorrow I'm going to do a 12,000 square foot house down in Duluth. Done many houses over 10,000, and there aren't that many in the Inland Empire, but I've done quite a few of them in the Riverside and Temecula and area. So it breaks up the monotony, I guess, of doing those little tract houses.
Over the course of your last 16 years, how has the appraisal industry changed just in the course of your career?
Well, when I got into it, like I said, I was originally just doing commercial, but I jumped into the single family in around 2004, 2005, when the market was just screaming upward, kind of like it is right now. And then, of course, you know, we all know what happened in 2006 and 2007 and so forth. I hope we're not going to see that again. It's very reminiscent of those times where people are bidding and kind of panic buying. So I've ridden the wave up and down. I'm just little cautious of what's going on right now.
Yeah. And I'm going to get into what the market looks like in a little bit.
Sure.
Now, how much has technology changed in even that short span for you?
A tremendous amount of technology changing for the individual appraiser. A lot of the software. When I go out and inspect a subject, I've got my iPad and I'm doing the sketch right on my iPad. And I can do it right into the report, where, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, I had a piece of graph paper and sketched it out. And then hopefully I didn't make a mistake. This morning I was doing an inspection. I typed in dimension 2 feet off, but by the time I got around to the other end of the house, I knew it right then. I didn't have to scratch my head and go, where did I make a mistake? So that's one aspect of it. The access to photographs, aerials, street views. The technology is wonderful now, which means you can get a lot more precise on what you're doing. But on the other hand, the clients expect a lot more too.
Sure. So
the amount of time it takes if you're doing a proper job. Some of the technology saves time, but the requirements have increased, which consume time. So it's a balance.
I'm going to ask you a tough question.
Sure.
Is technology a threat to the industry overall?
I've been hearing that from the beginning. I used to go to these lunch meetings and so forth, and everyone saying that the residential appraiser was going to be replaced by technology. And it has to a point with appraisal waivers and so forth. But still, the eyes and ears to go look at a property physically and then to compare it, I don't know. I don't have that answer. I know everyone keeps talking about it. Like I said, for the last 15 years, people have been talking about it, but here we are. We're still here.
Yep.
You know, the requirements change, and we'll talk about that later, I think. But yeah, so I maybe in the long run, but not in the short term.
Yeah, that's like keep hearing about these self-driving cars, and even as far as like we have the technology to have pilotless airplanes now, but who's going to get into one, right? That's part of that.
Yeah, it's the normal stuff isn't where you need us. It's when it's the abnormal, the things that, you know, the computer algorithm doesn't see. That's exactly really right. What we're getting paid to do. And,
because the AIs are only as good as the data that's being put into them.
Exactly. And, you know, I think the with the UAD, I think that's what they're trying to do is collect as much data as possible. But I still think we provide a lot of value in the industry, especially in markets that we're in right now, where people are kind of getting panic buying, is for lack of a better term.
Sure. Now we just we're coming to what we hope is the end of probably the craziest year on record with this pandemic. How did the pandemic change the industry, and what kind of adjustments did you have to make to do these appraisals in the last year? Can you walk us through the last year of appraising?
Yeah, I think HUD and Fannie Mae and everybody, I think they did a pretty good job allowing exterior only appraisals. So we would do it on a regular 1004 form, and in the map reference spot, we put exterior. So we wouldn't go inside. Some of the clients would allow the homeowners to take photos interior. So I wasn't going in a whole lot of houses, and the houses I was going into were vacant, you know, whether somebody already moved out or whatever. And I think that helped a lot of us get through the fear, because we didn't know what was going on. And the homeowners didn't want strangers going into their homes. And so I think that helped quite a bit. And I think as things kind of leveled out and safety precautions and so forth were implemented, it's a lot more relaxed. I still do my safety precautions, wear the booties, wear the face mask, sanitizer, and so forth. I still do that. But I think we're past it and pretty much beyond it. That's kind of my take on it.
And what we're hearing about everything, you know, restaurants, you know, retail, there's a lot of changes that happen, especially in real estate too. What changes that came about do you think will stick, you know, that maybe they're going to stick around? They found out, oh, well, we could do that a little bit better, or maybe that works a little bit, you know, better. Is there anything that is going to stay past this pandemic?
I don't see it on a permanent basis. There are still some homeowners, in fact, I had one this past week where they didn't want anybody coming into their home. It was a refinance. And so there again, I did an exterior. The bank was okay with it. Apparently it has to do with, how much equity they have in their home and so forth. But we did a drive-by, and the homeowner sent me photos. and comparing them to previous MLS photos and so forth, you can verify that, in fact, it is their home. And I did an exterior, but again, we did it on the 1004 form. Hadn't done one of those in a few months. But so I think there's still some individual preferences of people being safe and so forth. But most of the appraisers I know, they're just doing their job going in, you know, keeping the face mask and the, you know, the sanitizer and those precautions.
I'm going to switch gear a little bit now. The way I met you, and I'm sure, you know, it was a longstanding relationship before that, was at the Market Trend Seminar for the Appraisal Institute of Southern California. Can you tell me what your involvement with that institution has been, and how you got started with them?
Sure. I've been involved since early on with the Appraisal Institute. Kind of alluded that I had a business partner early on, and kind of learned about the Institute. Personally, I believe in education. So I got involved because they have really good education opportunities, whether it's from the national level, continuing education. And the way I met you was through the Inland Empire Market Trends Seminar, which we hold once a year. I've been on that committee for, I think, 12 years now. So we do this seminar one day a year. We bring in real estate professionals. Bruce has been our keynote speaker, lunchtime speaker for many, many years, and continues to help us out. And then we have a lot of it's commercial-based, industrial apartments, retail, and so forth. I volunteer a lot for the Appraisal Institute. It's really given back to me. I believe in constantly learning, attending their seminars, their education, and I'm networking. I've networked with people. It's brought me business. And that's why I went ahead and got my residential designation of SRA. Had to take multiple classes and testing and so forth. So it's above and beyond the ordinary, or not ordinary, but traditional appraisal. So the Appraisal Institute's been really good to me. And so I feel I need to give back. Again, we appreciate Mr. Norris participating and you being his right-hand man in this scenario.
Now, along with what happened with the pandemic, there's been a lot of focus on equality and things like that at the national level from all kinds of industries, you know. So I know that the Appraisal Institute on a national level is focusing on, you know, DE&I, so diversity, equity, and inclusion. How much is that is going to filter down to the local level into, like, let's say, the Southern California Appraisal Institute?
Well, I know it's something that everyone's looking at right now, and it should be looked at. As you mentioned, the Appraisal Institute National is definitely looking at it. It's coming in through our newsletters and so forth and responding. The local chapter, we have set up committees and personnel to make sure that we're doing the right thing. Appraisers overall, I mean, when we sign an appraisal, we're already saying that we're third-party independent, and it's, you know, not relative to religion, race, you know, all the protected classes, so to speak. But I think it's something that needs to be looked at. I know there had been some articles that have come out that has gotten the attention. And even President Biden has mentioned that he wants to make sure that the appraisal industry is doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Evaluation, Fairness, and Improvement Act, right?
Exactly. What's the ramifications? You got me on that one. I don't know.
Yeah. I was looking at some stuff on the national level, and, you know, the 2021 president, Rodman Schley, he says, you know, he thinks that the whole profession has a lot of stake, with this issue. And they're taking a hard look at unconscious bias, that has existed in the, you know, appraisal industry. Let's talk about the current market. How tough, is it appraising, with everything you alluded to it, you know, with this panic buying and things like that, but, you know, the shortage of inventory, the increased demand, how much pressure has it put on the appraisers?
It makes it tough. I mean, cause we go by data. That's what we care about, is what the data tells us. And, you know, when these agents put a sale price, when they put a listing price, I presume they most of the time put it where they think they can sell it. And what's happening is people are paying over what the asking price is, multiple bids, very much like 2004 and 2005. They've got equity in their homes that they're selling, you know, their move-up buyers. So they'll pay an extra $40,000 or $50,000 over what the asking is. The problem is we can't always appraise it at that. And we do look at pending sales. I try to call all the pending sales to figure out what the contract price is. Some agents will tell you and some agents won't. We're looking at active listings because essentially the sales comparison approach is based on the principle of substitution. If you've got, you know, multiple houses to choose from, you're going to pick the best price, the best deal. Well, in this case, inventory is super low. So when something comes on the market, people are jumping on it and they're outbidding each other. The other thing I'm seeing a lot of is waiving the appraisal contingency because they do have so much money in their pocket. They'll say, okay, if the house was $500,000, I'm going to bid or go contract for $550,000 because I've got that extra $50,000 to put down if the appraisal doesn't come in. And this is very much what was happening as the market increased in 2004 and five, at least in my perspective. So we can only go by what's there, what the data tells us. I think every appraiser I know is looking really strongly at the pending sales because that's the most recent market deal. I do regression analysis on what the micro market is doing, like the neighborhood, so to speak, and also a bigger area. So I'm doing multiple regression analysis to try to figure out the rate of increase. So if I have a sale that's a month and a half old, I might make a time adjustment upward. And it should coincide with the pending sales. So we're not always at the most recent highest sale doesn't always mean that's the limit of the market.
How much room do you have to play with that?
As much as the data tells us. If you're doing the data analysis, you know, whether it's a regression or a combination and verifying with the agents that are involved in these transactions, some things that are really helpful, for instance, if I'm doing a purchase and the purchase price is high and the agent says, well, I had 8 offers. I'm like, give me copies of the offers or at least a cover sheet. You know, so I can put that in the report and say, or not necessarily those pages, but I can comment and say, look, they had 8 offers over, you know, 550. They took 550. So this is, you know, it helps me conclude to make sure that there's nothing, you know, to make sure it is what it is.
Is the only thing that really makes a difference is when it's a, you know, you're protecting the lender. If somebody's a cash buyer, like, does that matter?
Cash buyer doesn't have an appraisal.
So not at all, huh?
Typically not. I mean, there's some, sometimes there's 2 private parties that agree on something. That's not an arm's length transaction. I got a call this morning from somebody selling some land in Temecula and it's 2 buyers and it's a cash buyer, but they still want to have an appraisal just to make sure that they're paying what they at the market value. But those are not arm's length deals. And deals like that, I won't even use them for a comparable. Because how do I know they're not related? You know, was it exposed to the market? If you go by the definition that's in the form of market value, because there's multiple definitions of market value, depending on which government entity you're working for. Or if it's private, then it's different.
How long does it take you to arrive at the number?
Totally depends on the property. Like I said, I'm working on a nearly 12,000 square foot house and I just finished up a 1700 square foot tract house. Very, very different. Appraisers get paid. I either bid or negotiate my prices based on how much time it's going to spend me. And it also depends on the appraiser and how technology savvy they are. Some people are old school and take a long time. And some people are, you know, I've got a colleague who's totally paperless. He does his measurements and everything. He uses his iPhone. I'm kind of somewhere in between.
You're a little, not totally late to adopt, but a little late, huh?
Exactly. You know, and I spend the appropriate time. And there's times where, you know, we go out to measure a house for several reasons. We're trying to verify that it matches public records to make sure there's no non-permitted room additions or even permitted room additions that didn't get recorded. So we're just trying to verify what the subject is. And there's been many cases you get out there and the subject is not what you think it is. And you already ran all the comparables and so forth. And guess what? You got to start over now because there's an extra 1,000 square foot you couldn't account for. So there's reasons why we have to do what we do.
So being California, the affordable housing crisis, you know, one of the things that a lot of people are looking at was, or is ADUs, so accessory dwelling units. How does an appraiser take into account the ADU?
Well, you try to find comparables with ADUs. You try to compare it to something similar, like solar. If a solar system is paid for, you try to find comparables that have solar, and you try to derive what the market will pay for it. They call it match paired analysis. Similar to any amenity, like a swimming pool, maybe an additional garage, you're trying to derive the adjustments from other properties. Can't always find them. And sometimes you can do what they call contributory cost. Say, okay, it costs, you know, $100,000 to build that ADU. And we haven't gotten to the level yet where they're renting them, where you can use income. But there's different techniques. And these are some of the things that I learned with my advanced classes with the Appraisal Institute. But generally, you can find some other properties that in your request, a question about ADUs.
Are they always attached to the main house?
Well, each municipality has different definitions. Does it have a kitchen? Does it not have a kitchen? Is it attached? You really have to dig in. Can it be rented? Can it not be rented? Because, you know, they used to call them in the old days mother-in-law quarters or in-law quarters or guest houses. There's a lot of terms, and you got to figure out what the municipality, how they see it. They're allowing them to, in this case with the ADUs, with the state of California, like you said, they're trying to allow a lot more. Which would be rentable. So they're changing zoning laws where you don't normally have that. So they would be rentable. So now your density becomes a little higher. I don't see a huge effect on that yet, but I think it's coming.
Yeah, I agree. We have many investors in our network that are, that's where the deal is right now for them. Is, you know, buying these properties that maybe have a little bit of extra land, are zoned correctly, and they're going to put an ADU there and, you know, get a little more rent.
Exactly.
So that is some of the focus. Now, one of the last questions I'll ask, is it all regular purchases that you're doing these appraisals for now? Because we've seen in California overall, you know, the REO deals or the investor deals aren't just like it was in, you know, 9, 10, and 11. Do you get to go on a lot of, investor appraisals?
No, not so much. The moratoriums for that go back to your earlier question about what's gone on in the industry relative to COVID. The moratoriums have kept people from paying rent, but they can't be evicted. Some people don't have to pay their mortgages and they can't be evicted. I actually do work for Fannie Mae. I was doing all the foreclosures and short sales. They had put a moratorium, and I hadn't done anything for them in over a year. I just did one a week or two ago. It's a home equity conversion mortgage, a HECM, which is essentially a reverse mortgage. And the person passes away and there's no heirs or whatever, and they end up with the house. I did one of those, but it had been over a year since I did one of those. As long as the market's hot, I don't see a lot of available investment properties unless you're really, really astute. No, I was doing them back in the days. I have personal friends that are brokers that they've been flipping houses for, you know, 30 years. And I think they're sitting on the sideline right now waiting for these moratoriums to be lifted and, and so forth.
Are they still on vacation from how well they did in, you know, 10, 11, and 12?
Yeah, no, they're still doing well. They're brokers, so they're doing very well right now. And I think the market, depending on what happens with these moratoriums that are going to be lifted this year, I think. And then we'll see if people, if the government intervenes to modify loans or things like that, which they've already been talking about, to help people so they don't lose their homes. I don't think we're going to get as dramatic as we did in, 2008 and 2009. I don't see that. But I do think there is going to be a hit, and which will increase the inventory once all the legal stuff gets done. And so I figure a couple of years from now, the market will, get a little bit extra inventory and slow down, cool down a little bit.
What is the weirdest thing that you've ever had to appraise?
We've done some pretty complex properties with full-blown, almost commercial-style horse facilities, completely covered riding arena, like you'd see like in a rodeo, with labor dormitories, apartments for the workers, and, just huge, huge property. Very complex. Sometimes as an appraiser, I don't feel very wealthy when you go into some of these huge, beautiful mansions. I actually appraised a house that was 400 square feet also. That's the size of a two-car garage.
Yeah.
And in that case, I feel very blessed and wealthy at that point in time. So everything's relative. I've got colleagues that do nothing but the high-end stuff in like Hollywood, Malibu, and so forth. So, there's a bunch of us out here and everyone has their own market. I just stick in the IE. That's what I like.
Sure. What did you do as a witness for the courts?
Well, it was actually a civil case. The primary one that I've worked on multiple litigation, but actually only testified the one time. And it was a foreign investors had some land and property for a commercial flower growing. And the foreign and the domestic people on this side basically frauded the foreign investors. And it was a lawsuit. And the people, they cheated. it was pretty obvious. I think the jury didn't have too difficult of a time, but that's a whole different world. Litigation, it's interesting. I've done some stuff for damages when a house burned down. In fact, I've done a couple of those. So the insurance company hires you, but it's a litigation, it's a lawsuit and so forth. So, and a lot of that's done on income and potential loss of use and loss of rent and things like that.
Now, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, wanted to hire you for an appraisal or something like that, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the Appraisal Institute website. I live in Moreno Valley, and it's Robert King is my name, my legal name. And so they could search on the Appraisal Institute website, find an appraiser in Moreno Valley.
You know what? We'll link your LinkedIn too.
Yeah, do that. That's probably the best way to do it.
Bob, I really appreciate you doing this for us, being my rookie podcast. I've actually been on the radio before, but that was when I was working for the nonprofit sector. Yeah. I was on Spanish radio of all.
Perfect. Yeah. I appreciate it, and appreciate what the Norris Group does for us on our seminar every year, and appreciate Bruce and what he's brought to this industry for Southern California.
I know he's looking forward to being live again, so hopefully, but I'm sure by next year, we'll be all, getting together again. And he's really looking forward to that.
No, we appreciate it. And we got the feedback from the seminar, which we just actually had, last week, week before. And a lot of people said they loved the seminar, but it's so much better live.
Thank you, Bob. You enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk soon.
All right, Joey. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.